Good day, everyone, and thank you for standing by. Welcome to the quarterly All-In Payments call. Today's conference is being recorded. At this time, I'd like to turn the conference over to Adele Barr. Please go ahead.
Thank you, Hannah, and thank you, everyone, for joining us today for the All-In Payments call. And we apologize for the delay. We just want to make sure that everybody has a chance to dial in and hear us from the beginning. And so we are, of course, mindful of your time and realize we started a little late. And if time permits on your end, we'll also take it over just slightly over, depending on where we are with the Q&A. And as you'll notice, before I hand this over to Tim, we're using a new platform or different platform. There could have been a few of you who actually already had a chance to use our Global Meet platform on the All-In call. But just in case some of you were not on that call, what I'd like to do is take some time from Tim and actually have a chance to just show you just a few of the features, which you probably may have already figured out. So what I'll do is go and speak to you a little bit about Global Meet, our webinar. Here you have the meeting lobby. When you first started, you notice it basically just looks a little different. My analogy here for this is, you know, whenever we have to get a new cell phone, the cell phones work basically the same. You just have to get acclimated to the new settings and the locations of everything. So for Global Meet, you have this meeting lobby. So once you were able to click on the link and you entered your information, your first and last name, your company, your EN, and your email, then the screen should have come up and you can see that it lets you know that the call hasn't started yet. There's some information here. Now, I think the biggest change from this platform to the other platform, from the other platform, is that you had a chat and you were able just to have a running conversation going on. What we've done is now we're using an ask a question feature. So at this point, there isn't a chat that everyone will see, but you have a chance to basically ask your question here. And so you put in your question, you click on that button and you ask your question, you enter the information, and then you'll have to click send. And so upon hitting send, it'll let you know that you successfully submitted your question, and then you can close that out. And what you'll see below is it'll indicate that how many total answered questions. You see the red arrow pointing to the one. And then once you click on that, if you want to actually view the whole answer to the question, you just click on that button right there. And you can click this button right here. And what that will do is will actually pop out your question. So you have that option. You can see the questions being answered that way. Now, if by chance, then you want to still continue to collapse the ask a question section, you just need to click on that button right there, indicated by the red arrow. And that'll appear there. So what we'll do is there are going to be questions that we'll answer, and some of them will be broadcasted if we see that it pertains to all, or we can ask out loud in the chat when we open up for Q&A. And then at this point, the other feature that I wanted to show is how you can, here, that's where I'm showing you how you can collapse it. And the next thing that you'd want to see is perhaps you want to see the full screen. And if you look at the top right-hand section, you'll see the arrow indicating where you can actually make this a full screen. And then that way you're only viewing the presentation. And, of course, then you'll just click on that little button again, and then you can return. So, again, I'm sure you've probably already had a chance to play around. And what I can do now is I can hand this back over to Kim, and so she can begin her payments call. Well, thank you for your attention, everyone.
Thank you so much, Adele. Good afternoon, everyone, and thank you all for joining today's All-In Payments call. I am Kimberly Cutler. I am the EN Payments Manager and the host of today's call. The purpose of today's presentation is to provide insight into the payment process on the following agenda topics. So the topics that we have today, we have a couple of announcements, the ePay file stats, submitting manual payment requests, submitting payments for self-employed beneficiaries reminder, earnings calculation for concurrent beneficiaries, and payment checklist, and of course we have valuable resources for all of service providers, and we will have a question and answer form at the end of today's presentation. So as mentioned, we do have a couple of announcements today, and so what I would like to do at this point is to turn it over to Natalie, who has an announcement regarding the APLR. Natalie?
Yes, thank you, Kim. I just want to remind everyone that APORs and 222s are due. And cure notices will be going out next week for those who haven't handed them in, which could result in termination. If you have any questions, you can contact EN Service at enservice@ssa.gov.
Okay. Thank you, Natalie. And our next announcement, as you can see on slide two, mentions the portal update that took place on April 18th, so just a couple of weeks ago. And we informed service providers that effective February 1st of this year, state-of-the-art involvement with a successful closure longer than 18 months prior to ticket assignment will not prevent employment networks from receiving payments when the beneficiary achieves trial work level earnings after ticket assignment and all payment criteria are met. Now, previously, the ticket portal would not allow ENs to submit payment requests for phase one milestone payments if there was a successful VR closure. On Saturday, April 18th, SSA updated the portal and removed this restriction. So ENs will now be able to submit phase one milestones for ticket holders that have a successful state VR case closure outside of the 18-month window prior to ticket assignment to date. So when we first made the announcement in February, we were aware that such payment requests were not allowed through the portal, and ENs had to submit those cases manually. So now ENs, after the update, the ENs can now submit through the portal. But a reminder, ENs should complete the updated 18-month look-back to determine if the successful state VR closure was outside the 18 months prior to the ticket assignment date before submitting a request for payment. And please remember that if the successful state VR closure was within the 18 months prior to ticket assignment, phase one milestones are not available. So this is why it's important that we need all ENs to complete the 18-month look back to using the ticket assignment date. The portal will provide you the closure date for the state VR and plug that information in, so you will be aware if those phase one milestone ones are excluded because the successful closure was within the 18 months. But once you complete the updated 18 month look back tool and it indicates that those phase one milestone ones are not excluded because of VR closure, the next step is you want to make sure that the phase one milestone ones are not excluded because of prior earnings. So you want to make sure you're doubling your use with the 18-month look-back tool, but due to the portal update, if the successful closure is not within the 18 months prior to ticket assignment, you will be able to submit for payment requests through the ticket portal. And the next slide, what we wanted to provide was the ePay stats. So TPM staff started processing the last ePay file back in February of this year. The file was completed earlier this month. So here we have the stats for the last ePay file. So there were over 20,000 claims paid and 4,807 SSNs paid on the February file. The total payout for the claims process was over $10 million for this particular, for the last file. So that's where we just wanted to provide the stats from the last file that was processed. Now, the next ePay file will start soon. So before that next file comes out, we just wanted to provide a few ePay reminders. So reminder one, you may submit your payment request through the ticket portal instead of waiting for ePay. And phase one milestones are not paid through ePay. So just remember that EANs must request phase one milestones through the ticket portal. And please remember when submitting phase one milestones 1 through 3 that EANs are required to provide proof of relationship. Reminder 3, unassigned tickets are not included on the ePay file. And final reminder, EANs must have passed their annual service and support review to be ePay eligible. So just make sure to keep these 4 reminders in the forefront when it comes to the ePay file. On slide 5, what we're covering is submitting manual payment requests. As we mentioned, now that we have the portal update, there should be a limit, or we shouldn't see as many manually submitted payment requests, but there are instances when an EAN may have to submit a manual request. So we do know that all payments must come through the portal, but if unable to do so, EANs must submit the payment request manually, which is just fax or mail, but you must make sure that you include Form 1391, which is the EAN payment request form with all required documentation. So please, if you're submitting your payment request, please do not just submit stubs or evidence of earnings. All manually submitted requests must include the EAN payment request form. And if you are having to submit your cases manually, that means for some reason you're unable to do so through the portal, so you must submit a screenshot of the ticket portal indicating that you cannot submit the payment. So in other words, when you're trying to submit your payment through the portal as required, if for some reason you receive an error message that will not allow you to submit for payment, you must take a screenshot of that and provide that along with your payment request. And here on this slide, we actually provide the steps of where you can go to download the EAN payment request form. So again, I just really want to reiterate that, because sometimes we are receiving a request and we do not have that completed form. It is required, and sometimes we do not have the screenshot of the ticket portal indicating that you're unable to submit through the portal, and that will prompt the call from the help desk. So please make sure you're providing all the required information when you're sending in a case payment request manually.
Pardon the interruption, Kim. Kimberly, if you can maybe position a little differently your phone, there could be possible just a little distortion. So I'll put to the next slide for you. Thank you, madam. You may continue.
No problem.
Hey, Kim,
yes.
Could you just repeat for the EN when the next ePay will start? We have a...
Okay, sorry. We're not sure the exact date yet, but we are anticipating that we're going to receive the file soon. So maybe in the next week or so, but we do not have an exact date. But once we start processing the ePay file, we will make an announcement in the ticket portal.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. You're welcome. Adele, do I sound better? Just want to make sure before I continue.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you.
Okay. All right. And so, again, we're on slide 6. And this is just a reminder for EANs when submitting payments for self-employed beneficiaries. So a few years back, we stopped accepting certification payment requests, and submitting for self-employed beneficiaries used to fall under certification payment requests. So as we know, all payment requests must include evidence of earnings. So this could be earnings established in SSA database, pay sub submitted by the EAN, employer prepared earnings statement, or earnings information from the work number, but we must have evidence of earnings when processing payments. Now, earnings for self-employed beneficiaries usually do not post in SSA's database until after the beneficiary files their annual taxes. So sometimes we're getting premature requests, and which results in a denial because we do not have the verified earnings in SSA's database, because the self-employed beneficiaries have not filed for their annual taxes. Now, we, of course, if they're filing their taxes timely and that information then will post into SS database, and if the earnings are verified and all other payment criteria are met, then we will move forward with processing the payments for self-employed, but we have to have that information, earnings information verified. And another reminder is when submitting for phase one milestones 1 through 3, EINs must provide proof of relationship. So even if you're working with the self-employed beneficiary, you have to make sure that when you're requesting phase one milestone 1 through 3, that you also provide proof of relationship for those beneficiaries. So that's just a reminder for those service providers. Now, the next few slides will cover calculating earnings for payments. And one of the reasons we added this back, this was an agenda item in one of our previous calls, and there were a lot of questions surrounding how earnings are calculated for when you're making payments. So we wanted to provide this information to providers again. And the key thing to remember is when we're doing an assessment for payment and on earnings, for Title 16 or SSI, Supplemental Security Income payments, are assessed using the pay date. For Title 2 or SSDI payments, or Social Security Disability Insurance, payments are assessed on wages earned within a pay period. We do have some beneficiaries that are concurrent, which means the beneficiaries are receiving both SSI and SSDI. And those payments are assessed based on whichever earnings satisfies the payment, which satisfies the payment. So it's either going to be the pay date or it's going to be earned in the month. So, again, we wanted to cover this item again, hopefully to provide just a little bit more clarification on how we use the earnings when we're assessing payments. So the next few slides will cover that information. And now the first slide, when we talk about calculating earnings, is focusing on phase one milestones and phase two milestones. And as you can see here, and one thing I want to note too is even after the call, this is a great tool just to have as maybe a desk reference when you're looking at your pay stubs or you're looking at the earnings information. You want to make sure that you are aware of the benefits that your beneficiary is receiving, and so that you will know what to expect when you're submitting your payment, how we're going to enter those earnings, and how we're going to use those earnings. So as you can see here in our first case, the beneficiary is in current pay status for both SSDI and SSI. So as mentioned on the previous slide, this is a concurrent beneficiary. They're receiving both. So here you can see in the earnings situation. So earnings are verified in SSA database at child work level or SGA. So whether you're asking, that depends if you're asking for phase one milestone or phase two. But the earnings verified in SSA database are for SSI only, or the EN submitted evidence of earnings showing that the beneficiary was paid at child work level or SGA in the claim month. And there are no verified earnings or earnings are below trial work level or SGA or SSDI in this case. So here the payment is assessed using the SSI rule. And as mentioned, SSI rule is based on when the earnings are paid in the month. So again, this is a very good chart to use because it breaks down when you have a beneficiary that's concurrent and where the earnings are verified and how we would assess the payment. So in the next case, you see the beneficiary is in the same status. So it's in current pay for both SSDI and SSI. Now, in this case, the earnings are verified in SSA's database at trial work level or SGA for SSDI only, or the EN submitted evidence of earnings showing that the beneficiary wages were earned at trial work level or SGA during the claim month. Now, in this case, there are no verified earnings or earnings are below trial work level or SGA for SSI. So the payment is assessed using the SSDI rule, which is wages earned in the month. So in these two scenarios or cases here, we're showing you when we have a concurrent beneficiary, so the beneficiary is receiving SSDI and SSI. So in this case, we're going to use whichever earnings satisfy the payment. whether it's earnings paid in the month or the wages were earned in the month. But that is how we determine how we use the earnings. Now, next, if the beneficiary is in current pay for SSDI and non-pay or suspense for SSI, payment is assessed using the SSDI rule, which is trial work level or SGA wages earned in the month. So, of course, we're only using the rule for SSDI because SSI is not in current pay. And the last case shown on this slide is if the beneficiary is in current pay for SSI and non-pay or suspense for SSDI, payment is assessed using the SSI rule, which is trial work level or SGA earnings. So I can't really stress it enough that this would be a great desk reference for you all to use before submitting your payment request. So that slide focused on phase one and phase two. So the next slide talks about when you're calculating earnings for outcome situation or outcome claim. And if the beneficiary's pay status is in suspense due to work and earnings, the same rules apply for calculated earnings, but we know these earnings are based on SGA amounts. So if the beneficiary is in suspense for both, then the payments will be assessed using whichever earnings satisfy the payment. And a note here to make is that before an outcome payment can be paid, the benefits must be in suspense due to worker earnings for both titles if the beneficiary is concurrent. Now, on this slide is that the last two items, this is just an FYI, because if beneficiaries in current pay for SSDI and non-pay or suspense for SSI due to work and earnings, then, of course, we're going to deny the claim. And we're going to deny the claim because the beneficiary must be in suspense status in both programs. So this case here, So the beneficiary is in current pay for SSDI and in suspense for SSI due to work. No payment can be made, so we're not going to do any assessment of earnings because in order for an outcome to be paid, remember, the beneficiary must be in suspense due to worker earnings for both entitlements. So this was more of an FYI here when it comes to outcome payment. So the key thing, again, to remember is whichever entitlement your beneficiary is receiving and where the earnings are, that is how we are going to assess your payment. So, again, we just want to kind of add that information back. Hopefully, again, you guys will use the chart as a best reference just so you can be clear about how the earnings are applied. And we've also provided, on the next slide, we also provided the EM payments checklist before, but I just want to make sure that you guys are aware that this is a very valuable tool for EMs to use. Some of the key information that's provided in this checklist includes, the benefit status required to receive phase one milestones, phase two milestones, and outcome payments. We have information about the 18-month look-back tool, the phase one milestones exclusion,
Hi, Kim. This is Michelle. It looks like you've faded a little bit.
Okay.
And also, I think. Yes.
Can you hear me now?
Go ahead.
Can you hear me now?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. So I'll just repeat the slide 10.
It may be possible that the screen went out, and I'm doing my best to bring that back up.
Okay. I'll just kind of give you a minute to get back and let you know.
So ways of working on our new aid here.
I'm sorry, dear, I didn't hear you.
I said new ways of working nowadays.
Oh. And we apologize for this. We just want to make sure that before I move on that you guys are actually able to see the same screen that I'm seeing. So we're just going to give Adele some time to pull the presentation back up.
And meanwhile, there are John is on the line, and there are some chat questions. We can go over some of the chat questions while I'm bringing this up. Okay.
Hi, Kim.
Hi, y'all.
So our first question is, what circumstances would allow someone to get SSI concurrent with SSDI?
That's a good question, but I think as far as when it comes to payments, and I'll just speak from the TPM side, we do not determine the benefits for the beneficiary. We just base it on SSA system. So that would be a question, I think. I don't know if someone from SSA wants to field that question. Okay, so maybe they might be on mute, I think, John. But when it comes to payments, John, I could just speak from the payments piece. That is already determined when we're making a payment. So we don't do any type of assessment of, you know, the eligibility for a beneficiary receiving SSI and SSDI. The only thing I know is one is need-based and the other one is disability insurance. So that is decided before it even reaches us. So I'm not sure how that is determined.
Hi, this is Katie Stavinger from SSA. Can you ask the question one more time, please?
Absolutely, Katie. The question is, what circumstances would allow someone to get SSI concurrent with SSDI?
And that's just a general question from the chat?
Yes.
Okay, well, that is determined by our Social Security field offices. I think for this, when we put the FAQs out, we'll put the answer in there. It's a little more detailed that I think we want to get into on this call. It's already, 40 past the hour. So we'll make sure that this answer is in the FAQs for anybody who needs that answer. We do have that on our website, so if you want to go to the next question, please.
All right, perfect. Our next question is if a concurrent is paid at the T16 rule because no evidence is in the portal, are they paid by T16 rules for the rest of the ticket?
That's a good question. I think the rule, and I may ask someone from SSA to jump in, but I think the rule is once whatever entitlement you're under when you receive your first payment, I think that continues. Is that the case, Katie?
Yes, that is correct. The first payment on a ticket, the title of that payment, the payment rate, first payment determines the rest of the payments on the ticket.
Mm-hmm.
All right. And then our next question is, are there plans to update the portal to reflect whether the earnings established in Social Security's database are SSI or SSDI? Right now, the portal only shows SSDI earnings. It would be helpful if ENs can distinguish what kind of earnings are established.
This is Katie. I'll take that one again. So the earnings that are displayed in the portal is the earnings in the last 24 months. That is just supposed to be used as an indicator of whether one of your beneficiaries is working. That is not supposed to be used as the answer to whether or not you should submit a request for payment. So if you do not have the supporting documentation on whether a beneficiary should or should not be paid, you can't rely on the portal to be the final arbiter for whether those earnings are correct.
All right. And then our next question, can you talk about situations when payments go straight to MO and or a client has been paid through phase two milestone four, but then is switched to milestone outcome?
I'm sorry, John, could you repeat the question? And just so we know, Adele is back up, so we'll just make this the last question for now. What was that question, John?
Absolutely. Can you talk about situations when payments go straight to milestone outcomes and or a client has been paid through phase two milestone four, but then is switched to milestone outcomes?
Okay. The first thing I want to say is milestone outcome is a payment method that you would choose. So ENs, when they initially become an EN, you have to choose your payment method, either milestone outcome or just straight outcome. I think what they're mentioning is if you, the EN, receive phase two milestone four, and then maybe the benefits are suspended, and then it goes into the outcome phase. If that's the question, then you make the payment phase two milestones, and we know the criteria for that is the beneficiary's and current pay status. But once the beneficiary goes into a suspense status, which means they're no longer receiving a federal cash benefit due to worker earnings, then the next available payment would be an outcome payment. And once the beneficiary enters the outcome period, no more phase twos or phase ones can be paid. I'm thinking that was the question because, again, milestone outcome is more of a payment type or payment method, should I say.
Yes, and Kim, this is Deborah. Just let me add to that for the EN, if that was the question. The EN would be eligible to receive any available milestone payment once the 12th outcome is paid. So if in that situation you just described, if only the phase one milestone four was paid and no phase two milestones were paid, a reconciliation payment would be calculated after outcome 12, and any phase twos, or even if there were some phase ones that were not paid because the beneficiary went into a suspense pay status, those milestones would be paid with a reconciliation payment after outcome 12. Now, the ENs don't have to do anything to get that reconciliation payment. The system will alert. There will be alert there that the reconciliation payment needs to be reviewed. So, as Kim said, once the beneficiary goes into suspense status due to worker earnings, no milestones can be paid, but they could be paid any available milestones that were not paid to the EN could be paid with a reconciliation payment. And when I say available, there could be some phase one milestones that could have been excluded due to 18-month look back. So those would not be included in that calculation.
Okay. Thank you so much, Ms. Tennessee, for that added information. And John, I was hoping, that was the question. And hopefully you all can hear me a little better now, and I apologize for that. Okay, so, and we will go back, like I said, at the end of the presentation, we will have time for additional questions, but Adele, I think you said you're up and good to go, right?
We should be displaying the EM payments checklist. That's where we left off.
All righty, all right. So thank you, everyone, for your patience. Thank you, John, for at least allowing us to get some of the questions in the chat answered. And so we are on slide 10, and what I was going over was the EN payments checklist. And just letting you guys know that this is a valuable tool for ENs to use. And some key information that's provided on the checklist is the benefit status required to receive phase one milestones, phase two milestones, and outcome payments. The 18-month look-back tool for phase one milestones exclusions based on prior earnings or successful state VR closure,
It has information for cases with state VR involvement, permitting for payments, payment denial decisions, when we diary a case and why, and we also have information that covers split payments. So, again, this is a very good tool for you and for Ian to have. It's another one of those things that I would suggest that Ian have as a desk reference before submitting for a payment request. And on slide 10, we actually give you the path that you can follow to locate the Ian payments checklist. Okay. Now, in conclusion of today's presentation portion of today's call, we wanted to make sure we provide you with some valuable resources. So as you can see here on slide 12, today we did discuss the Ian payment request form that is required when submitting a manual payment request. And we also went over the Ian payments checklist that is a very valuable tool for Ians to have. So here on slide 12, we're actually providing you the link for you to be able to access that or access those two documents. And on our final slide, we're providing the contact information for assistance with any issues related to payments, ticket assignment, the service provider website, or the ticket portal. So here you can see the hours of operation, and you also have the email address that you can contact with any of those issues. And please just be very mindful that we cannot email any PII, so please make sure you're not, if you're contacting us by email, that you are not including any PII without it being password protected. So that concludes the presentation portion of today's call. But before we open the call for question and answer, I just want to go back just to maybe a couple of slides in the beginning of the call. I know we had some Ians that were still, still connected, still dialing in. So I just want to make sure that you guys were aware of the two announcements that were made. The very first announcement we talked about was the submission of your APOR. And, Natalie, I was trying to find the information. So I just wanted to make sure you guys know that the APR and the form 222, it is due. It is due this week. So you want to make sure that you get that information sent in. If you have any questions regarding the APOR or your form 222, please make sure that you contact Ian Service. And that's enservice@ssa.gov. And the second announcement we made that SSA actually updated the ticket portal on April 18th. And there were different updates through this release with the ticket portal, but one of the announcements that we covered was that ENs are now able to submit phase one milestones for ticket holders that have a successful state VR case closure outside of the 18-month window prior to ticket assignment day. Previously, the portal would restrict that, so Ians were having to mail in their payment request, but that's no longer a restriction, so please make sure you are submitting your payment request through the portal, and also please make sure that you're completing the updated 18-month look-back to determine if the successful state VR closure was outside the 18 months prior to ticket assignment date. And you want to make sure you do this before submitting for your payment request, because if the closure, if the successful closure was within 18 months prior to ticket assignment, then phase one milestones are not available. And one other thing, just wanted to make sure you're aware, we did complete the February e-pay file, and we are expecting to receive the next e-pay file, maybe in the next week or so, but once TPM starts processing the next file, we will there will be an announcement in the portal alerting you all that we restarted that file. But please remember, you don't have to wait for the e-pay file. You can submit through the ticket portal. And remember, phase one milestone ones are not paid through e-pay, so you must submit those via the portal. And for phase one milestones 1 through 3, you must submit proof of relationship. And unassigned tickets are not included on the e-pay file. And please make sure that you are aware that Ians must have passed their annual services and support review in order to be eligible for EPAY. So those were just a couple of the slides that we covered in the beginning, and I just want to give everyone the opportunity to hear that information. Now, at this time, we will open the call for questions and answers. We do ask that you limit your questions to no more than two at a time. We want to make sure we try and answer as many questions as possible in the allotted time. We do understand that we got a late start, so again, we are going to try to extend over a few minutes, but even within that time, we just want to make sure that we can answer as many questions as possible. And TPM and SSA staff, we will answer those questions as best we can. But if you have questions about a specific case that you've already submitted, we do encourage you to contact the EN Payments Help Desk to assist you in the review of that case, as we do not have all details of your payment request. So it's better, again, if you have questions about a case that's pending, a case that was, you know, denied, you have questions about that, we would encourage you to contact the EN Payments Help Desk. That way they can look at the case, they can see the details of the case, and they'll be able to provide you a very clear answer to your specific case, okay? And first what we'll do, we'll take three calls from the phone line, and then we will rotate and take questions from the chat. And we will follow this rotation as time permits. So, Hannah, if you could open the phone lines, and we'll take questions from there first.
Thank you. If you would like to ask a question, please signal by pressing star followed by the 1 on your telephone keypad. Also, if you are using a speakerphone, please make sure your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. Once again, that is star 1 to ask a question. And once again, that is star 1. No questions in queue at this time.
Okay, we'll come back there. John, do you have any questions in the chat?
Yes. So our first question is proof of relationship an IWP?
I'm sorry, what could you repeat the question, John?
Is proof of relationship an IWP?
No, proof of relationship is not an IWP. The IWP, or individual work plan, is the agreement between the beneficiary and the EN. The services outline that the EN that they're going to provide to the beneficiary, but it is not proof of relationship. So proof of relationship, if you have pay stubs, then that is a standalone. So proof of pay stubs would serve as your proof of relationship. But if not, you would have to provide a list of detailed services that were provided to the beneficiary.
All right. And our next question is, you mentioned that payments are determined by either pay date or pay period. Do these same rules apply to the beneficiary during, for example, 2-for-1 split, trial work period, and SGA?
Now, as far as the first two, that is, again, that's outside of the payment processing. That would be more of a question for the field offices, but, again, we base it on the information that we have in the system. So it's already determined, but we do not do anything as far as what did you mention, John, the split. We just base our payments on the criteria, which is, you know, the benefit status and the earnings requirement for the requested payment.
All right. And then our next question is, could you please explain what happens when a beneficiary is working at a level that would have resulted in an outcome payment for the EN, but due to a past plan, benefits are not in termination/suspense status?
Okay. I know it's going to sound redundant because I keep just speaking from a payments point of view, that when we're processing payments based on current pay or suspense, that question is something that happens behind the scenes. What happens before it comes to a payment process with us? But if someone from SSA wants to take a stab at that, feel free.
Hi, Deborah. Could you explain what happens when a beneficiary is working at a level that would result in outcome payments for the EN, but due to a past plan, benefits are not in termination or suspense status?
Again, I think that would be something. I don't know. SSA, again, as Kim said, would probably need to handle that, but I think that's something the field offices make a determination on. We make payments based on what's posted to SSA's records. And if a beneficiary is listed in suspense due to work or earnings, of course, we would make an outcome payment. But if for some reason that those earnings are not considered SGA for some reason, or they're earlies or other things that may impact the earnings, that's something SSA makes a decision on. So if someone from SSA can provide more clarification on that, would appreciate it.
Jeff, can you speak?
I'm sorry. Go ahead, Katie.
I was saying, wait a second. Oh, this is Katie. I was just going to say this could be something we could put in the FAQ because this is definitely more of a policy question about what goes on behind the scenes at SSA. We can make sure we put that out there in the answer. For our payment rules, as Deborah explained, we can't make an outcome payment until the beneficiary is in suspense for worker warning. So on our side for the EN payment part, we have no control over what happens at the field office, but we can certainly provide you with more information on how that works behind the scenes and what you can do. We are just following the policies that have been set up. And if you need more information on PASS, we can make sure we put that out there.
All right. And I flagged that so that way we know that that's something we'll add to the recap. Our next question is, what if you don't have all of the information in order to complete an 18-month look back? In other words, the client has paid stubs, but there's not enough information to understand and complete a full 18-month look back.
So just to make sure I'm clear, so the beneficiary, they have pay stubs. What did you say after that, John?
But there's not enough information to complete a full 18-month look back.
Okay. Well, again, the 18-month look back is a good tool for ENs to kind of have an idea of what payments may, what phase one milestones may or may not be on the table. But when a payment request is submitted for phase one milestones 1 through 4, the EN payment staff will also complete the 18-month look back too, based on the earnings information that we may have in SSA's database. So we do encourage ENs to submit or complete the 18-month look back the best they can with the information that they have. But if they do not have the information to complete it, of course, you still submit for your request. And we, EN payments staff, will complete an 18-month look back tool based on what we have. And if there are earnings verified in the system prior to ticket assignment within that 18 months, that may exclude some or all of the phase one milestone ones, we will deny the case accordingly, or we will process or pay the case accordingly. So just use what you use the information that you have. And if you do not have it, please still go ahead and submit your request, and the staff will do their due diligence in using the information that we have to complete that 18-month look back too. But if you have your pay stubs, please submit those, because, again, that could go towards proof of relationship when you're asking for your phase one milestones 1 through 3.
All right. And then our next question, if a beneficiary is on unemployment and the unemployment payment is more than the salary was being earned, when the beneficiary returns to their lower salary, does the unemployment insurance use up the trial work period?
Again, that's does someone from SSA want to feel that? So they're asking if the beneficiary is receiving unemployment, right, and then they go back to work, they're asking if the unemployment payments be a part of the trial work period? Was that the question, John?
Yes.
Okay. Again, that may be a question.
You can only use earnings. Oh. Right. Go ahead, Kim. I think you had it.
No, go ahead, Katie. It's fine.
Sorry, I just wanted to make sure we got you an answer. We can only use work and earnings towards your payment, so unemployment earnings do not count.
All right. And did we want to switch to the phone line and see if there's any questions queued up in there?
Okay, sure. Hannah, do we have any calls or any questions in queue?
Yes, we have a couple questions in queue. We'll go to Hamid Hajavian with HH Employment.
Yes, so we're talking about the outcome that was based on non-current pay. So if they have any kind of, I guess I have as an example, I have several clients who have arrived at the milestone 11. And this is for an example for SSDI. So they've already gotten to milestone 11. They've kind of run out of that. But then let's say that goes into outcome because they're getting government cash assistance. Would that, if that government cash is suspended, what happens? I've got two or three clients that it's been over a year or a year and a half that they've been at that milestone 11 and working for a year and still getting the government cash, but it hasn't been suspended or listed as suspended. So it seems like SSA maybe isn't updated or caught up with that yet. So what do we do in that kind of situation? It's been a year or a year and a half. They're still working full-time and getting government cash as well. And then the payment requests are always getting denied. So what do we do in that kind of situation?
Okay. So this is Kimberly. So I understand what you're saying. So you've been paid through phase two, milestone 11. Benefits are still in current pay. And, of course, if you're submitting for an outcome payment, it's being denied because they're in current pay. Because, as we know, in order to receive an outcome payment, benefits must be in suspense due to worker earnings. One of the things that I would just suggest is that you have your beneficiary contact field office, continue to report their earnings. Because, again, on the payment side, we will not be able to make a payment, an outcome payment, until the benefits that is updated to suspense due to worker earnings. So I would just encourage you to have your client contact the local field office and just go from there, because, unfortunately, until that system is updated, until SSA database is updated to show suspense due to worker earnings, your request will continue to be denied. But there may be a delay in updating the database, but that would be a question or something that the local field office would have to address.
Okay. I could follow up to that with another question. Does that mean that they're going to be put in back pay once the SSA catches up and realizes that and they continue to pay? Are they going to owe all that in back pay?
Again, that would be one of the questions that would be better fitted for the SSA field office, because they are the ones that would process any type of overpayment to a beneficiary. I think the first step is just having them reach out. And if I could, one thing I would suggest is that if the beneficiary, they're still receiving their checks, maybe just put the checks in some type of savings account and don't necessarily spend that money in case they are or they do end up into an overpayment situation, they will have that money. But I would definitely encourage you to have the beneficiary reach out to the field office.
Okay, yeah, right. So then what about I'm not getting the payment then for those past months that I've submitted, for I've tried to submit the subs and everything for the last year?
Right. Again, I was, we would not be able to make a payment until the system is updated. So the first, I think and trying to get that resolved would be to take that first step and contact the field office, because you're right. Unfortunately, we will not be able to process your payment for an outcome as long as those benefits are in current pay. So just have your client reach out to the field office, and hopefully they will get the system updated and it will go to outcome status, and we'll address your payments at that time.
Okay. All right. And I keep on them all the time about making sure are you informing Social Security, you're contacting them about income, and they keep telling me that they have been submitting that. And so I don't know what the situation is, if it's something in between that client and Social Security, or if it's just not getting done. But anyway, thank you.
All right. Good luck with that.
And Hannah, our next question from the phone line.
Yes, we'll go next to Nicole Celestine with Best Staff Services.
Hi, Nicole.
Let's get my question, because I do have a question. Okay, so and I think you may have already went over this before, but I have one of my ticket holders. She did not close successfully with the state of Texas like 2.5 years ago, but they say that she did. So she finally got a job. And they won't let me submit for phase one on there in the system when I try.
Okay, have you tried?
Only allowed,
when was the last time?
I tried last week.
When was the last time? Okay. I'm sorry, go ahead.
I tried on April 10th, I think.
Okay. SSA did. There was an update to the portal on April 18th. So, before, if you were submitting for a phase one milestone one, there was that restriction that the portal would not apply. But after April 18th, that restriction is no longer there. So that's why I was asking you, when did you last try? So if you tried on April 10th, yes, you would have received that restriction. But now you should be able to go to the portal and you should be able to submit your request.
Okay, yes, ma'am. Well, thank you so much.
Okay, you're welcome.
That's the only question I have. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, thank you.
And Hannah, do we have any other questions?
Yes, we do have another question in queue. We'll go to Janelle Bardo with Center for People with Disabilities.
Hey there.
Hi, Janelle.
Hi. My question kind of goes off of what the previous gentleman was asking about when a beneficiary should be in non-payment status due to working at SGA level. Maybe they've already blown through all their child work period, their extended period of eligibility might be over. So therefore, when they're over SGA, they should not be making or receiving any more cash payment for SSDI. However, even though we've submitted every single pay stub to SSA, they have not performed a timely work review, and therefore he's going into overpayment now, right? So my question is, when I call the EN help desk for payment, they tell me go ahead and submit for milestone 1 through 4. They're not seeing the reflection of SSA because SSA hasn't performed the work review. My question is, if the EN has paid out the phase one payments during his time on recommendation of the help desk, would the ticket program ever come back to try to recoup those payments later once everything is reconciled?
Hi, Janelle. This is Jennifer, Tennessee. I'm sorry, Kim. I had just responded to Janelle's question in the Q&A, so I just wanted to let her know that she could find an answer in there, even though we can respond to her verbally. But Janelle, no, you would not be required to repay any payments issued to you based on a payment status that was retroactively updated. If the beneficiary was in current pay at the time you received the payments and all other criteria was met, for example, earnings, no look-back earnings, no successful closures, any of those, you would not be charged an overpayment. Overpayments are not charged based on a change in a payment status. Overpayments could be assessed if there is a changed or updated earnings information that we may receive after we made a payment. But if you were at the time you submit phase one milestones 1 through 4, if the beneficiary is in current spec pay, you are eligible to receive those payments. If later the record is updated retroactively, and for any of those claim months, the beneficiary is placed in suspense due to work or earnings, you would not receive an overpayment. And again, that's the answer to that was sent to you in the Q&A session, a written response.
Thank you, Ms. Timothy. And Janelle, did that answer your question?
Thank you so much for that reply. It really helps.
Okay. Well, thank you so much. So, Hannah, we're going to take, we're about 13 minutes past 2. So, Hannah, we will go ahead and take just one more question from the phone before we wrap up today's session.
All right, thank you. We'll go next to Al Olag with Employment Resource Network.
Hello.
Hi, Al.
Hello. Hi. I have just a quick question. I think it just requires a yes or no. Just to verify, employment or earnings prior to the award of SSDI does not count.
I'm sorry, your question was to earnings prior to a beneficiary receiving SSDI count?
Correct. Earnings do not count.
They're not taking awards.
No, not
sorry,
you know, that, in other words, if the person is not receiving SSDI, those earnings prior to the award do not count, yes or no?
What we look
I
for
think
as far
would,
as
you,
the
oh.
question, what we're looking for in exclusion for phase one milestone one is we look for prior earnings, or we look for earnings prior to ticket assignment within an 18-month period. That applies.
That's completely not. How would you apply the 18 rule when the person is not even receiving SSDI? So that's why my question is, earnings prior to award, the first award of SSDI, those earnings do not count, and therefore
right.
you could not
okay.
apply.
Okay.
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 So that's the answer.
Right. So,
the answer is no, right? The answer is no.
Are you talking about
prior
to date?
So we do not look at your
state of
disability.
I can't understand this. Can I please?
Okay, Al. Hi, Al. This is Kimberly. So if you're talking about for prior to award, what we're looking at, when we complete the 18-month look back, we will not go past the date of disability onset. So if your client received SSDI,
Let's say December of last year, the person got the award was in December of last year, okay? And there was earnings prior to that. Those earnings do not count, correct? It's either yes or no.
You do not go past the date of disability onset, correct?
Let me ask the same question before we answer.
Can you
that.
Answer the question with a yes or no? I just...
No. Let's be clear on what you're asking us. We want to give you the right answer, yes or no.
Okay.
But we want to be clear on the term. I want to ask SSA, is the date of disability onset equal to the award date? Because if it is, then we can answer your question two different ways.
Okay, so what's the answer then?
And that's what it is, because we look at the disability date of onset. We don't look like necessarily the award date. So that's what I'm trying to find. If those two terms are synonymous or equal, then we can answer your question. But if there are two different meanings, okay?
Deborah,
does anybody can they answer that?
Deborah, this is Patrice. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can now.
Hi, Deb. The date of disability is not always the same as the onset date.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
So the award date is not the same?
Right. I'm sorry. The disability onset
date
is not the
same
as the award date. They are not,
okay.
They're not always.
Okay. So was it Al? Then the answer
yes.
to that question is no. I'm sorry. Your question was, could we look at earnings prior to the award date? Yes, that's true, because that disability onset date could go further back than the award date.
So therefore, you apply the 18-month look back?
Mm-hmm. And let me tell you what the rule is for us. We look at the ticket assignment date. That's what the first month we look at. We look at all months prior to that, but we don't go back any further than the date of disability onset. So if that date of disability onset was like, let's say, 6 months ago or 12 months ago, we would only go between the ticket assignment date and that six-month period. We wouldn't go back any further than that. But it's not the award date that we're looking at. It's the date of disability onset.
Hmm. Okay. Well, it doesn't make sense because, you know, people think, I'm not getting SSDI, and it appears that I'm not
mm-hmm.
within the guidelines. So, you know, that certainly is confusing to everyone. And that's why I was looking for a simple yes or no reply.
Mm-hmm.
So,
mm-hmm.
In other words, the question, the answer is a big question mark still. Correct?
Hi, this
is
a question. Go ahead, Ken.
What I would suggest, Al, is I'm sure you have my contact information. Could you just email me your question that way again? Because we are talking about, you know, Ms. Tennessee explained the use of the 18-month look-back tool and how we populate that information and what the exclusion would be based on. So if you could just email me your question, if you have an example, then let me take a look at it because, as we stated before, you know, we don't want to confuse people with the DDO, the date of disability onset, and then, you know, and you're talking about award date. So if you could just send that, send me an email, and I'll be sure to address your question.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Okay, now we are about almost 20 minutes past the hour. So, again, I just wanted to thank everyone for joining us on today's call. We apologize for the technical difficulties, but we appreciate your patience. We definitely appreciate all of your questions. And if you have questions, again, please use our resources. We do have our EN Payments Help Desk, and we have a few slides, but the last couple of slides that will provide you with the contact information. And also, if you have questions related to, you know, you have clients that or you have beneficiaries that, you know, they're still receiving their benefits check and they're working way all above SGA and you feel like those benefits should be in suspense, I would strongly encourage you to reach out to have your client reach out to the local field office. They are the ones that enter the information, and that is the information that TPM will use to assess payments. So, please just be aware of that. You know, we base our payments based on the available information and the available status of beneficiaries at the time. So if you have questions related to that, please make sure you have your contact reach out to the local field office. And if you have any payment-specific questions about a specific case, please feel free to reach out to the EN Payments Help Desk. But again, I just want to say thank you for joining us on today's call. We look forward to speaking with you all again. I think our next call will be the end of July. So we will speak to you all then, and please, please make sure you stay safe. Okay, and that will conclude today's call.
And that does conclude today's conference. Thank you for your participation. You may now disconnect.